The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You're at Russ.
I am very well, Justin, but glad this week is over. I am weary, and even I am starting to get bored of the sound of my own voice, which is a rare event indeed.
Yeah, I've heard you on BBC Radio 5 Live, I think, and other things. And it's a big week,
it's been a busy week.
Yeah, there's budgets, there's bank stuff going on, there's all this stuff happening. It's mostly sort of a lot of negatives in there. But I tell you who's good for this week, the Irish, isn't it? I mean,
yes.
Cheltenham, they're hammering the UK horses, apparently Irish horses at Cheltenham. And, of course, on the weekend, it's the Grand Slam for
Ireland
in Dublin on St. Patrick's weekend, really. So it's going to be a huge, I think, celebration all week. So they've had a good week, the Irish.
They have.
If you've got a bit of Irish blood in you.
But no Irish banks mentioned in dispatches either. So
they're probably banking all the winnings from this. The liquidity is fine.
And you've got inflows rather than outflows.
Yeah, inflows as well from Guinness sales, all that stuff. So first of all, let's talk. I was looking on Twitter, and a couple of people were saying that the Fed balance sheet has increased. Now, of course, with quantitative tightening, they're supposed to be reducing this. And that's obviously been a drag in the markets, as well as raising interest rates. But it's true. But some people say, oh, they're going back to QE rather than which is, let's be honest, was largely responsible for the rally, the enormous rally we had after the COVID lockdown. It was like the S&P was like on steroids. It went crazy. But some people say it's not. They're not doing QE. They're loaning to banks. I don't understand.
Correct.
This.
They're providing fresh liquidity. Yeah, which is what actually, and it wasn't mentioned much at the time. They actually were doing this in autumn 2019, through the reverse repurchase facility. So there was actually a big spike in provision of liquidity to banks then. It didn't get a lot of coverage, and it actually passed by very quickly, mainly because COVID and everything else took over. But there was a period of distinct distress then, which they managed to smooth over, and it was hard to find out what the reason for that was. But yes, at the moment, after the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and
Signature Bank, and
now the downgrading of the debt of First Republic Bank and the wobbles at Credit Suisse, what the authorities are trying to prevent is what they don't want is the equivalent of somebody sitting in a darkened cinema shouting fire. Yeah. Because what happens then is that everybody runs for the exit. And in a banking context, what does that mean? Well, it means everybody tries to take the money out of the bank, which starts a run, which guarantees the bank is more or less finished. So what they're trying to prevent is a liquidity problem spreading into a solvency problem. So the difference here is that a liquidity problem is when banks start to see outflows and they start to see declines in asset valuation at the same time. So then they have to sell assets at discount prices to raise liquidity to meet the outflows. That makes things worse because they have to lend against the reduced asset valuations or sell at reduced prices. That tends to frighten people again. And so then you get a bit of a doom loop.
Yeah.
And then you get a solvency problem because eventually the value of your assets goes below the value of your liabilities, and then your goose is cooked. And that's what happened in 2007-09. What started as a liquidity crisis became a solvency crisis. So they're trying to nip that in the bud by A, promising to make keep depositors whole above and beyond the $250,000 federally insured limit, which, remember, is £80,000 in the UK and €100,000 in the European Union. And I think it's 100,000 Swiss in Switzerland.
Yeah.
Well, they're trying to calm people down.
Yeah, and it's all about that, isn't it? Confidence.
It's confidence.
As we know, you know, that if everyone went to the bank tomorrow to pull their money out, they wouldn't have the funds because a lot of that is in bonds and all that stuff. And and so that's the problem. You've just got to have confidence that there is the money there should you wish to get out, but not all at one time. And so...
Exactly. And so what? So the Fed is trying to prevent that from being resilient. You don't need to take your money out because it's backed up.
Yeah.
Forget it. End of. And they're also providing this bank term funding program to banks. If a bank does need liquidity, they can post collateral at book value, not at market price, for a year. So again, it gets around that doom loop of lower prices means more selling, lower prices means more selling, and so on. So that's what they're trying to circumvent. And so that's why the Fed's balance sheet has grown by $300 billion, which I guess you can say you would view the glass half full and say, well, look, the system is working. It's providing banks with liquidity. They're reassuring depositors. There is no need to take your money out. Bears will say, look, it just tells you that everything's a little bit creaky out there. Be very, very careful. So I think you probably pays your money, you takes your choice. I think my view would be Silicon Valley Bank was a badly run bank that took far too much risk and didn't manage its assets and its liabilities very well. Credit Suisse has been an accident-prone bank for many, many years. I mean, when I was a junior analyst, it all used to be Credit Lyonnais that you'd go, if there was trouble, it was always Credit Lyonnais that found it, which is why its nickname was Credit Mayonnaise. Now, that eventually ended up as part of Credit Agricole, I think. But now it's Credit Suisse. If there's a problem, you'll find Credit Suisse generally, whether it's the Archegos hedge fund collapse 2 years ago, Greensill Capital 2 years ago, allegations of money laundering. Generally speaking, if there's been something to put your foot in it, they've managed to put their foot in it. And eventually customers have had enough and they've been taking their money out. And you can understand why. And so again, what you've got there is a liquidity situation. So what, again, the Swiss authorities have said is, it meets all of our capital adequacy requirements. It meets all of our liquidity requirements. We will backstop deposits to the tune of 50 billion Swiss or $54 billion. And again, what they're hoping is that will, in the short term at least, calm things down. I'm not personally convinced that two badly run banks are capable of bringing the whole shebang down. But I think what it does show is, as you say, is that the race memory are still pretty raw after 15 years ago, and confidence can be knocked pretty quickly.
Yeah, but it's about panic and herd mentality. Do you know, image I had in my mind then was, do you remember the end of the first Italian Job where Michael Caine is in that bus hanging over the cliff?
With the gold hanging at the end of the bus.
Yeah, and they're trying to get the gold back. But of course, if everyone ran to get the gold, the bus would topple over. So
yeah,
got to stay
I think
back
Credit Suisse is too big to fail, right?
Mm.
The damage to Switzerland's reputation as a financial centre would be something to behold.
Yeah.
And also, the complicating factor with Credit Suisse is its investment bank and the counterparty role that it plays in derivative transactions and the role it plays as a prime broker for major hedge funds, one of which was Archegos a few years ago. So I do suspect that it is in the too big to fail bracket, and that's why the Swiss have acted as quickly as they have.
Yeah.
I guess the interesting thing now is, as you say, is, what do central banks do? Do they actually start to loosen policy? Well, the ECB stuck two fingers up at everybody there yesterday and on Thursday and put through a 50 basis point increase.
Yeah.
So they were saying, you know, they said we can achieve financial stability and fight inflation at the same time. So they said that in 2008 when Jean-Claude Trichet, then ECB president, oversaw an interest rate increase, and they kind of lived to regret that. So let's hope that we don't get an action replay of that.
Yeah, that was odd. That I thought, in my mind, you know, it's almost like they want to stick with their policy. They want to be seen to be right, and that you've got to change your mind, I think, when situations change, because, you know, they could have just, you know, eased down there or just paused. So we want to see what the fallout is, but it's almost like we know everything. We know what's going on.
Well, we know they don't know that. I suppose in some ways they were probably a bit damned if they did and damned if they didn't, because if they did, it was like, well, are you sure? And if they didn't, it was like, oh, no, you're panicking. So I think they were probably in a bit of a tricky situation. I think what's interesting, I mean, your point at the very start, Justin, about about central bank liquidity and its running financial markets, I think is extremely well made. And I think given that we've only had interest rate increases for a year, 15 months, you are clearly seeing signs of stresses and strains. And I would suggest, and you're the chartist, so I defer to you, but I'm literally writing a piece right now, and I'm just sort of tinkering about. And, you know, you can, as policy is, first of all, not being expanded, as loosened as quickly, and then as it's been tightened. If you look at the share price charts of, say, special purpose acquisition vehicles, SPACs, through the IPOX index, or IPOs through the Renaissance IPO ETF or the Renaissance International IPO ETF, and you draw the line from the start of 2020 to now, basically the last 3 years haven't happened.
Yeah, there was a massive
bubble in the middle.
It's one of those bell curve things that goes up
It is literally a bell curve.
Yeah,
If you've been asleep for 3 years, you'd wonder what on earth everybody was talking about, because the share prices are back to where they were, if not lower.
Yeah.
Now, Tesla is still a bit higher, give it its credit. Bitcoin is higher, give it its credit. But Tesla is still setting a range of lower highs and lower lows. AMC Entertainment and GameStop are some of the most ugly charts you could ever wish to clap eyes on. It's like, you know, those scenes in the Tom and Jerry cartoons where the cat treads on a rake, gets smashed in the face, bobbles off and treads on the next rake and gets smashed in the face. That's what the charts of GameStop and AMC Entertainment look like. Big rallies and then bang, back down again. Bitcoin's actually trying to forge a bottom, it looks to me, but I defer to you. And I think that's probably, again, because this sense of central bank control might not be everything that it's cracked up to be. And that's why gold's popped above $1,900 an ounce.
Yeah.
So I my personal guess is that, I mean, the markets are now pricing in the peak in rates a bit lower than they were previously and possibly cuts by the end of the year. And I'm starting to wonder whether that is what we will get. I think markets, as we've discussed before, have been expecting a pause or a pivot because inflation would cool, we get a soft on or landing, and therefore everything was hunky-dory. I think we might get a pause or a pivot, but it might be for reasons that we don't want, which is that some of the financial plumbing's a bit blocked, and so we've got to be a bit careful what we wish for, I think. So I wouldn't be shocked if things stayed choppy from here. I wouldn't be shocked if, if central banks were to then, you know, be one and done or do and start to recalibrate. And if they do start cutting, or heaven forbid, going back to QE when inflation's still above target, I'm not sure that's necessarily something that anybody really wants to see. And it might play quite well for real assets, as we've discussed before, but not necessarily paper one like bonds or cash.
Yeah. Do you know what? I keep going back to that. We talked about it, yes, last week, the inversion of the yield curve. And it's never, going back as far as the 80s, it's never been as inverted. And I remember Jeremy Hunt saying, we're going to avoid a technical recession in the budget. And I thought,
well, we'll see.
I believe the yield curve is probably a better predictor of recessions than Jeremy Hunt is. And
the OBR, given they're doing their best. But, you know, in the end, as the statistician George Box said, all models are wrong, some are useful. And I think we'll over the next few months, we're in the process of finding out which ones will be which. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. And as far as I can say, I did send an email to sort of my sort of club saying, I'm very cautious just looking at that yield curve. And even though you may see rallies, because you tend to get these recessions happen sort of 12, 18 months after yield curve inversion, even though we've had this now since May, the yield curve inversion, last year. So, yeah, it's a little bit worrying. But was there anything in the budget that piqued your interest at all, Russ?
Well, I think probably the most politically controversial thing was the abolition of the lifetime allowance for pensions of £1 million. And I noticed that Labour have already said they're going to repeal that. So it shows just how difficult it is to plan your finances. Now, clearly, £1 million pension is a nice problem to have, right? So if you have £1 million pension, you withdraw your money, anything over that is taxed at 55%. It's still a nice problem to have. So, I'm not sure there'll be stacks of public sympathy for the people who are involved in that scenario. So that's probably, the fact that Labour already said, if we win the next election, that's gone.
Yeah.
You know, I think that probably dampens the impact of that. I think what most intrigued me was, I mean, Mr. Hunt, I mean, in the end, there just isn't much money in the kitty, right? I know we've borrowed less than we thought, but that still means that we're borrowing, and we're still borrowing very high amounts by historic levels. So I think his room for manoeuvre is limited. It was interesting that he set aside, 20, 30 billion pounds for capital allowances and tax breaks and tax reliefs for the creative arts, for investment in plant and IT and capital equipment. But the Americans have just put aside over $600 billion. And the Koreans have just put aside $420 billion over 6 years for autonomous vehicles, batteries, displays, semiconductors, and so on. So the sums that he's talking about are really small, and that's why he said, "I'll come back in the autumn with a more expansive plan."
Yeah.
It just intrigued me, and I was, obviously.
How much did he say he's putting aside for that?
About £30 billion.
£30 billion. So even if you and how much is America doing?
About 640 billion.
All right, so even if you times the population by five, which they are roughly America, so it doesn't add up, does it really? So,
No. So there's some work to be done there. And it just intrigued me that, I say this as a history graduate, but Harold Wilson was then Labour leader of the opposition in October 1963.
Yeah.
And he won the 64 general election by promising to fuel and stoke the economy of Britain in the white heat of technology. And 60 years later, Jeremy Hunt is saying, we're going to make Britain a science and technology superpower. So I think, given every politician in the interim their credit, they've tried hard, and the UK is brilliant in things like the creative arts and digital technology and animation. It leads the world. And I think that Arm is a world leader in the semiconductor industry without a shadow of a doubt. But I think it just goes to show without knocking any politician for their efforts, if there was a lever to be pulled that could do it easily, I think that they found it and pulled it by now.
Yeah. Do you know what? It doesn't make any sense. I'm just looking at Bitcoin. It's just gone up above 20. It's getting close to $27,000 now, which is like it hasn't been this high since June 2022.
I think,
What's the dollar doing? Because normally it is. Is the dollar weak?
I think this is a loss at our central banks losing control again scenario, and monetary people running for cover, which is why gold has popped as well. A scenario and people thinking, I think people talk about gold as being an inflation hedge because of the 70s. I actually think it's a hedge against loss of control.
Yeah.
Because there was no inflation in the 2000s. It was all about financial crisis and gold went up like a rocket. So I think in that respect, it is about, is there a deeper problem? So I think it still serves its purpose as a stress buffer, almost a bit of a crash protection more than anything else. I think other than that, it's probably it's probably still Warren Buffett's inert lump of metal. But I think I'm not convinced that SVB and Credit, I think Credit Suisse and SVB are just badly run banks and they fail and maybe they fail and that's that. I don't think that they will bring the whole lot down, but I think they do highlight there's a lot of debt out there, there's a lot of opacity out there, and I don't think they had particularly good risk management systems. But even if you have a good risk management system, if that doom loop begins of foreselling begetting foreselling and all correlations go to one, then there's trouble. Actually, what I think is why the central banks and regulators have acted very quickly. I know that free marketeers will balk because in the end they are probably bailouts backwards way around, but the alternative probably is a lot worse.
Yeah, well, it's a bit odd when, because if you look at the balance sheet, they said that the balance sheet expanded by $297 billion to $8.63 trillion. And when you realise that people are now putting more confidence maybe in Bitcoin and gold than the dollar, that is a bit worrying, isn't it?
I think it shows that people are very, very twitchy. And it's almost 2 years since Archegos went bust. And that did actually, if you look at the charts, that actually did call a top for some of the more speculative stuff that was happening in the markets at the time, like SPACs, IPOs and so on. And you know, I think that, I know we all talked about the new normal. I think that was an aberration. I think, you look at the history books, look at the price charts now, that was an aberration of epic proportion and fueled by central bank liquidity, a tidal wave of it. That tidal wave's now going out, and as Warren Buffett always used to say, when the tide goes out, you find out who's got no shorts on.
Yeah, and it's not good in this weather. No. All right, marvellous stuff. Thanks, Russ. Speak next week.
Enjoy your weekend.
Are you having any bets on the Gold Cup?
I tell you what, all my bets at Cheltenham this week have fallen out the back of the telly. So you really know. My dad's not been doing too bad, but I've been doing absolutely appalling. But I really fancy Conflated in the Cheltenham Gold Cup this afternoon.
Okay, marvellous stuff. Well, hopefully we can't make any money in the market, so maybe we'll some money there. Cheers, Russ. Speak next week.
Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.